Welcome to the Nurse Break and the Nurses Collective podcast. I'm your host, Jackson, a registered nurse, and I'm thrilled to have you here. Each episode, we speak with Aussie nurses exploring their incredible careers. So grab your favorite drink, get comfortable, and remember, if you're watching this live, feel free to drop your questions in the comments for our guest. Let's get started.
Welcome. Good afternoon, everybody. Those who are watching, I'm Jackson. Yes, I'll be running you through this interview today with amazing guest Louise Whiteman, who I'll quickly introduce in a second. But just for the admin, for all those who are watching this live, you can please put in the comments where you're watching from. And if you have any questions for Louise throughout this entire interview, chuck them in the comments and I'll be able to put them on screen. And to those who are watching this as a podcast down the track, thank you for watching and supporting Nurse Break and Nurses Collective. So I am super thrilled to introduce you to Louise Whiteman, who, let's just say, has an eclectic career. She's a clinical nurse specialist, registered nurse, registered midwife, has worked across Australia, rural and remote nursing, and even globally, I believe Canada, et cetera. So we'll delve into all those kind of things. Conversation today is going to go a bit with the flow. And we're going to talk all things child, maternal, and family health nursing. A bit about she's the chair of MCAFMA as well. So we're going to talk all about that. And let's delve in. So Louise, appreciate you coming on this afternoon. Where are we talking to you from at the moment?
So I'm coming to you from Maitland in New South Wales, just 45 minutes from Newcastle.
Yeah, right. I actually just spoke to the president of the University of Newcastle Student Society, Nursing Student Society's president today. So there you go, small world. What's the weather like in Newcastle or where you are?
Very hot. It's sort of climbing into the 30s very rapidly.
Yeah,
hot,
right.
Hot and dry.
Hot and dry. Sounds like Darwin. Let's delve into it. So you've done a lot and we're going to try dig into some of it. I honestly just want to start with, can you share your journey into nursing and then sort of talk about that transition into maternal, child and family health nursing?
So I began my nursing journey in Queensland. Back in the days where Queensland, you still did your nursing training through the hospital-based system. So I did my registered nursing at the Royal Brisbane. And then I worked for 12 months in a surgical ward at St Andrews and then went back and did my midwifery at the Royal Women's. So from there, I headed out into Western Queensland, so a little place called Quilpie, and had a very interesting time for 12 months out there. I even delivered a baby under a tree because we were heading, first time mums weren't allowed to birth their babies in Quilpie. It only had 109 people in the town and we had to go to Charleville. So we had to hop in an ambulance and halfway through under the tree just in front of the cheapy roadhouse, we had to pull over because that baby wasn't waiting for anybody. And then we turned around and came back. So that was quite interesting. Yeah, so I then moved into other Roma, and then I hopped on a plane and went to Western Australia where I worked as a agency nurse for the Western Australian government, and I ended up working. My first port of call was Port Hedland for a month, 2 months, and then to Wiluna Nursing Post, which I believe now has an Aboriginal medical service there, no longer just a nursing post, and then to Tom Price, which was a mining town, which I spent an extra 6 months there before I jetted off overseas and worked in England for a period of time and then went to Canada. So in England, I worked as an agency nurse in the University College Hospital in the NICU for a while. And then when I went to Canada, I worked as a community nurse, so looking after people with disabilities in the community. And I also looked after a baby that I would go into the family's home overnight and monitor the PEG feeds in there. Did quite a bit of travelling around, came back to the UK, spent another year there, and in that time did a lot of travel. So it's about 3 years I was away overseas and then came back and landed back in WA again and worked for a period of time in as an agency nurse in Perth while I converted my certificate qualifications into a Bachelor of Nursing at Edith Cowan University, then back to Tom Price for a period of time, three children later.
And here we are.
Moved to Gladstone.
Did you meet your husband through nursing? It wasn't like a patient or something.
Well, no, at the Parabadoo Hospital Ball, actually. So, which is right. A town 80 k's from Tom Price.
The hospital ball.
Yeah. So back in the day. Yeah, back in
the
day.
He didn't work in the hospital, did he, or something?
No. He's an electrician in the mines. So,
fixing like one of the wards and you saw him up in the light and you're like, he's my man.
No, very random meeting. So when we went traveling, he went to Canada, I went to the UK, but we ended up meeting up again and spending another 2 years traveling overseas. Yeah. So then we moved to Queensland and just for something different, I went and worked did casual as a midwife in both the private and the public hospital, but I also set up a young parents program in the Women's Health Centre, which was a non-government, so we got a grant. And while I was there, I also worked as a private lactation consultant well. So
a private lactation consultant?
So most people have probably heard of lactation consultants who support women in their breastfeeding journey. And so very few get employed in hospitals. There's just not that recognition. So I sat an exam. So I was an international board certified lactation consultant. And so with that, I was able to set up private practice. So I'd visit people in their home. So I was working in the Young Parents Program, working as a lactation consultant and a midwife in the hospital in varying times.
Who can become a lactation consultant? Is this something that you have to be an RN for? Pretty much,
nope. So people who work for, who are breastfeeding counsellors for the Australian Breastfeeding Association, it just varies. There are a number of GPs who are lactation consultants, lots of allied health professionals, particularly speech therapists. It's a matter of the number of hours that you need to do for education. And you sit an international exam that's so I've been an LC for 20 something years. How old's my daughter? 22 years.
Okay.
So you've
done a lot. And I guess I want to backtrack for a second and just ask you, for those who aren't entirely sure, what actually do maternal and talk about all the different type of roles, I guess, but what actually briefly do maternal, child and family health nurses do, and what different type of roles are there / what type of patients do you see?
Yeah, well, we call them clients because we work in the community. A child and family health nurse is someone that looks after your family with your baby from birth to 5 years. So most people, when they have a baby, get given a personal health record book for their baby. And it's varying different colours in every state of Australia. So there's regular health checks, up to about 18 health checks throughout that 0 to 5. And we work in the community. So we would often, throughout Australia, parents who have a baby are offered a home visit within their first 2 weeks of having their baby. That's the child and family health nurse who comes in. And then we work out of clinics. So we do home visiting. We work out of clinics in what we call the universal service. We also work in secondary services like some of the big ones that people might know are Nagala or Tresillian or the Ellen Barron Centre. So that's a residential parenting service. So if parents have got problems with their baby sleeping, their own mental health, behaviour, challenges, the child and family health nurse can help. So it's a varied service. Mm.
And how does someone become one? Is there a qualification you need to do, or do you just have to,
at the
starting stage, be a Bachelor of Nursing, that's it?
Yeah. So at a base rate, it's a registered nurse. And in some jurisdictions like Victoria, you also have to be a registered midwife. And then you need to do a minimum of a graduate certificate in child and family health nursing. So that's offered as a grad cert or a grad dip, or you can do a master's. So that's the important part, because it's more, I guess it's more than weighing babies, as people often say, oh, what do you do? I'm a child and family health nurse. Oh, you're the one who weigh babies. Well, we do a bit more than that. We, you know, look after parental mental health, and that's become a big part, and also child mental health. There's quite a bit, even from an infant, where children are experiencing poor mental health. So it is about, we look after the child and the family. So, you know, we have three clients in the room usually, not one.
And that just made me want to ask you, it wasn't actually one of the questions I'm going to ask you, but what are some common misconceptions about maternal, child and family health nursing?
That we're the baby health nurse, and that we just weigh and measure babies, and we tell you what to feed them, and we'll tell you how they should sleep. I guess the child and family health role came into being. It was an infant welfare role back in the 1900s, really, where, you know, there were a lot of children who were dying from disease. So it was like registered nurses who, we need help. We need to help parents look after and feed their children. And so there's probably, I think it's Victoria and New South Wales, there's been 100 years of child and family health nurses. And so, yeah, that's how it started, and it's developed, you know, very broad since then.
So I learned this one coming up with questions with you, even though I've sort of just asked you questions that we haven't talked about. And I said maternal and child health nurse, child health nurse, and then you were like, incorrect, let's stick with maternal, child and family health nurse. Can you tell me, because look, I didn't know this, and I'm sure many, many people who aren't in this field don't know it. Can you talk about the importance of the language about the role and what it all kind of means?
Yeah, so I guess in the challenge for us as a profession is that in every state in Australia, we're called something different. So New South Wales, you're a child and family health nurse, you're a child health nurse in Queensland, you're a child youth health nurse in Western Australia, and in Victoria and ACT, you're a maternal child health nurse. And the maternal part came about when we were looking at moving from just child into, we were the early childhood nurses at one stage as well. So looking at, we started with, we need to look after parents as well. So it started with the mother. So it's become that maternal part of the puzzle. We then looked, well, we need, it's broader than that. So we became the child and family health nurse, because we work with the family. So we work with dads too. We're very much, and probably in the last 10 to 15 years, dads and working with dads are a big part of our role. And I guess in the other aspect is we're very welcoming of all kinds of families. So, you know, families who have two mums or two dads, or those sorts of families who have the grandparent as the carer, or it could be foster children. So that's a broader range. And so I guess that's where all of that differs, because we are more than just mums and babies.
This was doing interviews since 2019, since I started the nurse break, I have spoken to so many nurses in different fields I didn't know existed. And I think it's a common theme that a lot of students, and even at the junior level, there's so many careers out there we don't get exposed to or told exist. I just thought there was pediatric nurses and adult nurses. I didn't know there was all these dynamics. I do now, but obviously I didn't back then. Do you think there's a lack of, for your specialty, lack of awareness at an undergraduate level?
Absolutely.
And can you sort of touch on that?
Yeah, so often we're in the area that I work in, because I work in a residential, a secondary level service, so I see parents for home visits, or they come into a clinic and they spend, you know, a couple of hours with me, that we will often have child and family health nursing students, and very occasionally we will get an undergrad who's doing a community placement. But we would really like to see more of those undergrads spend some time with us in the community, because I often think community nursing is about doing wound care or working with older clients, and they don't understand that this is actually a really good career pathway. And that's something in my role as the chair of McHafner I would like to see more of, that people, instead of, I guess, probably in years gone by, child and family health nursing was where people went when they were sick of hospital nursing. And so it was often, I guess I could safely say, that the average age of a child and family health nurse is over 40 and probably climbing. And we would like to see child and family health nurses who are choosing this career soon after they graduate from a nursing degree and build up their skills within child and family health nursing, so that they could become the CNSs or the CNCs of the future and really take this profession to the next level. Yeah.
Okay. I just want to delve into your sort of rural and remote sort of nursing experience in this field. So you've worked across Australia. Can you tell us about, you know, not necessarily where, just where you worked, but some of those unique experiences?
I guess the thing is, having grown up in a country town, I was very drawn to going back regional and remote. I'm not a city girl at all. So I guess the challenges in the rural areas is access to services. And over the years, this particularly for midwifery, they've closed a lot of services and say that it's not okay for, you know, women having their first baby to birth their baby in the rural areas. And that's a real problem, particularly for our Aboriginal and First Nations people who would like to birth at home. And being taken out of your home and plonked in a city far away is a very terrifying experience. And I guess it's, you know, birth is a natural experience. Yes, there's lots of complications, but with the right support, I think it's a very safe option to birth in regional areas. And I had the interesting experience that in a nursing post that I was working in Western Australia, I did deliver a baby in my clinic room, very unplanned. This young woman came up from Perth to visit her family in the area that I was working in and told her dad she had, you know, she had weeks to go, but that was not the case. So we had a beautiful baby boy in our clinic room, and the Royal Flying Doctors were on call, but the pilot was out of hours, so we had to do it by ourselves. And, you know, that just showed me that, yes, she was a young mum and this is her first baby, but, you know, the time we spent together and the quietness of the space allowed us to have a beautiful birth. And albeit a bit scary at one stage when the baby was born with meconium in the fluid, so that's when the baby gets a bit stressed and poos. But we took care of that. That's the first time I'd ever put a scope into a baby to suction out. So, you know, some pretty, you know, you learn how to do these skills and you practice them, never thinking you're actually going to use them. But, yeah.
So, can we touch on some of those challenges, I guess, of working in rural and remote? So not just access to healthcare, but, you know, Indigenous Australians who want to have birth on country and not necessarily seeking healthcare out because they know they're going to be taken out of community. And how does that fit into your experiences?
So it can be really scary. And, you know, this is going back a few years for me. So it was back in the early 90s. Being a white person as the health professional, I relied very heavily on the Aboriginal health workers. They are the most amazing people to work with, and I was very, very fortunate in the areas that I work that I had a good relationship. They were my entry into anyone's home, into that space. They were my connection to the community, and without them, I wouldn't have been able to support or access anyone. Absolutely loved working with the children. We did a lot of ear health work, you know, went out and did a lot of support around ear health. And without those Aboriginal health workers, no one would have come and seen me, you know. So it's critical. It's absolutely critical. It's good that we are getting far more Aboriginal nurses coming through, and Katsunam is a great organisation that really supports nurses and midwives from Aboriginal backgrounds. So it's great, you know, it's really good. But and this is the challenge, you want to be supportive. And unfortunately, too, a lot of agency nurses come from big cities and think they're going out for an adventure out into the rural areas, and it is absolutely different. This is not, you know, protocols need to be followed, yes, but if you cannot communicate, if you cannot talk about what's going on in their family, where are they at today, unless you have all of that discussion first, then no healthcare practices will take place. You actually need to connect with them on a personal level if you want to be an ally in the health profession.
Now, that's really interesting. And matches my relatively short experience, rural and remote, in the NT.
Yeah.
Let's move overseas for a second. So you've worked overseas. Can you tell us a little bit about, I know you've worked in the UK and you did some NICU and some child health nursing sort of space. Can you tell us about how, like, today it's probably different to when you did it, but the process to get there, you know, the registration process, how that was, what the differences in culture and nursing was, and all those kind of things.
Well, it's still fairly simple for someone from Australia to go to the UK. Yes, you have to go through the process of applying to the Nursing Midwifery Council in the UK. And in general, now our qualifications are equivalent. And so, but for me as a midwife going over there, I would have had to do another 6 months, because in the UK as a midwife, you do a lot more community midwifery than I did at that time. So I only ever worked as a registered nurse there, and working in the, and it was quite fascinating, because I think my experience with breastfeeding and supporting breastfeeding parents was very different. The UK at that time in the early 90s didn't have great breastfeeding rates, and so in the NICU that was my job. I was helping all these parents breastfeed. Let's get the Aussie nurse in, she can help. So that was quite interesting for me, because one of my heroes of midwifery, Maggie Miles and Mary Renfrew, I thought, this is great. I'm going to the Mecca of midwifery. And it was a very different experience. And to work in Canada in a hospital, I would have had to sit their exam. And because I didn't know how long I was going to be there, I could work as a community nurse and work in the community with families, and they had a great community health program. So some of the there was one lady in particular that I worked with who had muscular dystrophy, and she was wheelchair bound, but she lived by herself, and she had workers come in morning, lunch, night, and to support her, to get her out of bed, to shower her, pop meals on. We would have a coffee in the morning together, have a chat. It was an amazing experience, because that was my first real foray into what community health could really be like. And I guess seeing what's happening with the NDIS now, I think we could do so much. Nurses have so much to give in that community space that it would be really good. So that really opened my eyes to the potential of community health nursing. And, you know, I think where nurse practitioners are going these days is amazing. And that's another area I think people should really look at.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. We do some big collaborations, our Nurses Collective Nurse Break, with the Australian College of Nurse Practitioners. This leads seamlessly into my next question. So as the chair of the Maternal Child and Family Health Nurses Australia, firstly, could you tell us about that? But then what are the key initiatives you guys are doing to work on some of these things you're talking about?
Yeah, so Maternal Child and Family Health Nurses Australia has been around since the early 2000s, but mostly we were a federated organisation that was a collective of child and family health associations around Australia. So recently in 2021, we became a direct entry, a single entity. So now, you know, maternal child health nurses can be a member. And so that's been a really big shift to look at a more national perspective. So some of the things that we're doing is that we are involved in the early years strategy. I attended a roundtable in Canberra earlier this year. We're trying to raise the profile of child and family health nurses, because as the budget bites, a lot of the funding goes into acute services. And so that more than weighing babies needs to be talked about, because it's like, well, anyone can weigh and measure a baby. So do we actually need qualified staff? That really came to the fore during COVID, when a lot of our child and family health nurses, who are also nurse immunizers, were taken away into immunization or the swabbing services. And then we had lots of babies and parents turning up in accident and emergency because they weren't feeding, they weren't sleeping, and they went, I wonder what happened. And then they realized, actually, we've just taken all those people away. So, you know, we need to put back. So really it's raising the profile. We're partners with the Mindaroo Thrive by Five campaign. So we're looking at, you know, child development and how important those early years are. We also work closely with Emerging Minds. So it's about creating those connections. We can't look after families in isolation. So it's about our collaboration with other organisations to raise the awareness of that birth to 5 years space and how much families really need support in those early years. So that's where we're heading at the moment. And a big key thing is looking after our child and family health nurses. So, you know, trying to make sure we can point them in the right direction for education. We run a conference every 2 years. Our next one's in Brisbane in August next year, end of August next year. We welcome anyone. You don't have to be a child and family health nurse to come to our conference, and it's quite a broad foray into, you know, children and families. And so anyone who's thinking about child and family health nursing should come.
That kind of leads into my next question quite well. So you're doing a PhD as well. I'm not sure if that's everything that's behind you.
A bit of mind mapping over there.
Can you tell us more than weighing babies, ... what your PhD is called, what it's about? Give us a little pitch.
Okay. So I've just submitted my thesis after 4 and a bit years. So I interviewed 60 child and family health nurses from every state and territory in Australia, and looked at 84 documents from health services all around Australia. So more than weighing babies, it's quality and competence in the specialist practice of child and family health nursing. So what we know is that, you know, the child and family health nursing role is very broad. But what I wanted to know was, how do we measure that? How do we identify that this person is qualified and competent to practice? We're not like an acute service where you might be, you know, you can do a wound assessment to assess someone's skills, or whether they can calculate medication right, or whether they can put a catheter in. Our work is relational. So it's our connection to the family, that is part of what we do. And so I wanted to know, how does that work in child and family health nursing when we're basing that assessment around building a relationship? So quite interesting that one of the findings was that health services are more concerned with ticking boxes and saying, yes, that 1 to 4 week check's done, yes, that 6 to 8 week check is done, rather than, is the person who's doing that actually qualified to do that? And so there's a real discrepancy between what child and family health nurses believe they do and what they value and the time that they value as well, because that's the other thing. It's gone from having an hour with a client to about 30 minutes, which sounds luxurious compared to a GP visit of 10 minutes. But it takes time to get to know someone, and families won't tell you what's going on in their world if they don't trust you. And a big part of our work is around, you know, family and domestic violence. And people won't tell you they need help if they don't trust you. So it's building that time. So I found that we've got some good practices in place, and clinical supervision, reflective supervision, is another passion of mine. And that's a really good way to support nurses in their practice and to see that they actually are quite qualified and competent to practice, but it needs to be valued by the organizations that they work for.
Yeah, no, I think that's, would you say this is a relatively small specialty?
No, there's probably, I suppose, compared to the rest of registered nursing, there's about 5,500 using the workforce data, which can be, depends on how you nominate yourself. There's about 5,500 child and family health nurses around Australia working in various ways. Yeah.
Definitely. I think it's definitely a miss. I think there's a few areas of nursing that are miss, potentially there's either significant systemic misconceptions, they're misrepresented or underrepresented. And some aren't viewed as, you know, they're not professionalized or recognized as a specialty in their own right. There's a few specialties that I know that are probably fit somewhere in that space. Kind of links to my next question. So how can healthcare professionals more broadly, and in that sense almost the community itself, work better to improve maternal, child and family health outcomes, but also, in other words, how can we work better with child, maternal, family health nurses? How can other professionals really work better with them?
I think we, talking about what we do, I think is really important, and working together. So I would see that practice nurses in a GP practice as someone who we would work closely with. So in my own experience, it's really important to build up a good relationship with that practice nurse, because, you know, the family you are seeing will see the GP for various reasons in that time. And if the practice nurse know you exist and know what services you offer and how you can support them, so they can manage the ill health and we can manage the wellness side of that family's experience, or we can work together. So that is the other thing, because in some areas, child and family health nurses don't immunise, so children will be going to the GP for that. So I think it's having those good communication links, and that is based around child and family health nurses need to do that work too. They need to collaborate. I guess because of my eclectic experience, relationships matter to me, collaborating with GPs, with paediatricians, with nurses in acute services, nurses in the community are really, really important. And collaborating with, you know, child cares, the toy library, the library that offers the opportunity for babies to do baby programs, all of those things really matter. And I think it's about that collaboration. And I think one of the missing pieces in this is that we don't ask clients or consumers enough, what do you want? What do you want? What will make your life better? How can we help you? We go, this is what we offer, take it or leave it.
You prescribe them a solution,
So I think that is a really important piece of the puzzle. And some of the work I'm doing with the Thrive by Five campaign is trying to push that side of things, that we need to ask more what do clients want. And that's for all nursing. I think all nurses should be asking that question, whether they work in a hospital or not. What do you want? How can I help you?
Yeah. No, I think it's important to make it patient-centered.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or client-centered.
Yeah.
For those who are watching, we're going to be wrapping this up quite soon. If you have any questions for Louise, please pop them in the comments on LinkedIn or Facebook, wherever you were watching this from. And look, if you're watching this 6 months from now, 3 months from now, 2 years in the podcast, feel free to check out McCaffner. Private, put a comment still, and we can pose them to Louise wherever she is.
Absolutely.
In the future from now. What advice, Louise, do you have for nurses grad students or anyone really wanting to transition or wanting to work in this space?
One of the, I guess one of the best ways would be actually to approach your child and family health service in your area. And as a student, and ask, can you come and visit? Can you have a look at what we do? If you've got a community placement, ask to do your community placement at a child and family health service and come and observe our practice and see what we do and have a talk to the child and family health nurses. And then we can point you in the right direction. There are a number of health services now who are looking to do transition to practice programs. So we do that when people are you know, enrolled in a child and family health course. But we're also looking at helping registered nurses transition into child and family health practice while working with child and family health nurses and then doing their grad cert or grad diploma along the way. So there are quite a few opportunities around Australia where, as a registered nurse, you can apply for one of those transition to practice programs and start working with us while you're gaining a qualification. So, you know, really, if you're a grad nurse out there or you're a student nurse out there, connect to your child and family health service. Ask us what we do and ask, can you be part of it?
And flick an email, Facebook message, or maybe in the future, Nurses Collective message to Maternal, Child and Family Health Nurses Australia Association College. Are you an association college? Is that all just
Australia? We're just Australia, so we're an organisation. Yeah. So we used to be an association. Now we're an organisation, a company limited by guarantee. So we welcome your inquiries. A lot of them I answer personally, so please post your questions, because we are a volunteer board. So we all have day jobs and this is our volunteer time.
And if you could give yourself some advice, if you can go back in the past and give yourself some advice now, let's go the other way. What advice would you give yourself as a junior nurse that you give yourself now?
Be open to possibilities. So look in all different places. I've worked in non-government organisations and government organisations, and don't just stay where you are. Just look for all possibilities. You will find nurses in the craziest of places. And my nursing career has taken me all over the world. I've met some fabulous people and I wouldn't change a thing.
That's a great way to wrap it up. Louise, how can people get in contact with you if they would like to reach out to you in the future?
Yeah, so they can go on to the McCaffner page. That's mcaffner.org.au and put an inquiry through there. Or they can also directly email me at chair@mcaffner.org.au. Happy to answer your questions.
Spell that for us. How do you spell that?
So it's McCaffner is MCAFHNA. Yeah. So chair@mcaffner.org.au.
We'll chuck it in the comments as well. And my final question for you is what is next in your eclectic career?
Good question.
Maybe that's the beauty. Sure. We don't need to know, right? We
just well, come to flow. It's only been 2 weeks since I submitted my PhD, so it's gone out for examination and it could be up to 6 weeks before I hear. I like to do a little bit of everything. So I imagine myself, you know, marking some papers, talking. I'd like to do more reflective supervision. I really like connecting with nurses and helping them grow. And I'd really like to see reflective supervision part of the acute nursing and midwifery sector, because it doesn't happen.
That is, for those who aren't sure.
So reflective supervision is not about super. I suppose when we think about supervision, we think about someone when you're a student, you know, monitoring what you do. But reflective supervision is about you having a quiet, confidential space to think about what's happening in your career, what things are getting in the way of you being able to do what you want to do, the challenges that you've experienced and being able to unpack them and go, I've had quite a traumatic day and I'd really like to debrief about that. But it's more than debriefing, because it's helping you go, well, if I encounter that again, what might I do differently, or what would I do the same? And so in child and family health nursing, we're offered the opportunity to do an hour of supervision a month, every month, with someone who's trained as a clinical supervisor like me, to be able to think about how can I grow my career and my skills. So I think the nurses who work in acute areas are usually run off their feet, and the only time they ever get offered an opportunity is if something goes wrong and they do a debrief. And so this is not about when things go wrong. This is about your everyday. And often I'll go to supervision myself, because I have that as well, and I'll go, really, there's nothing to talk about. But the moment you start having a conversation, you know, I've ended up doing a PhD because of supervision.
Really?
You never know what might happen.
Did you have any final things you wanted to say or reflections yourself?
I think I would say this is a great opportunity for me to talk about child and family health nursing and what we can offer. And I think one of the things as my children would say, you know, you need to get cool, Mum, and you need to get with it and connect to the wide digital world. And here I think it's really important. I really value the nurses coming through, because without, a growing workforce and nurses and midwives, and we need more of all of those people, I think it's important that nursing's not known very well for supporting younger nurses and younger midwives, and I mean younger not as in age but as in career, that I think I've had lots of good mentors over my experience, and I think that's something that nurses and midwives really need to give some thought to. How do we nurture the next generation, and how do we support them to grow so they can be great nurses and midwives and child and family health nurses?
Well, thank you for this chat, and I hope everyone who has been watching this live, and there's a few of you I think kept the entire time, and, you know, all those who didn't get a chance to watch this live and are going to watch this podcast, post your questions. Let us know how we do these better in the future. Do reach out to Louise and myself if you have questions. We'll do these haphazardly. I haven't done this in about a year or so, these live Q&As, due to being busy myself. Also, you probably see on my t-shirt, Nurses Collective, if you haven't heard of it or you haven't checked it out, if you're an Aussie nurse or student in Australia or midwife, just go to nursescollective.org and register an account. And it is Australia's nursing community. It's 100% free, and it's backed by heaps of cool organizations that you probably are already part of yourself. So check it out. And Louisa, yeah, once again, it was a pleasure to have you. We'll keep chatting after this. But to everyone else, I hope you have an epic Saturday afternoon. Thanks, guys.
Thanks for having me, Jackson. It's been brilliant.
See ya.